Blog Talk Radio.
You ready to rock this town by now?
Sorry, that's tomorrow.
That's
sorry.
Tomorrow night, you idiot. You moron. I was wondering why that was in the studio. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yeah, okay. Well, now that all that's said and done, welcome to another lovely clusterfuck of an episode of Down the Rabbit Hole. I, of course, am Rachel, joined, as always, by my two favorite cohorts and partners in crime. That would be Carl Kafer. Say hello.
Greetings, salutations.
And, of course, the wonderful TC.
Greetings from Pittsburgh, and hope everybody's doing well tonight. Now that we had a good laugh to start things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's probably good to start things out on a laugh because we have a bit more of a somber subject this month. We are focusing all throughout the Deviant Legion Network. We're focusing our efforts on Black history, and of course I am down for that with Down the Rabbit Hole. So last episode we did Black love songs to celebrate Valentine's Day, and this time we are just doing, you know, historically great Black artists. And, you know, we all have our reasons for thinking these people are quintessential in not just music history but history in general. So I think, what do you guys have to say?
Agreed. This is going to be a great show. I think this is going to be a really good show.
This
is
a real problem for me. I had such a hard time eliminating people. You know, I mean, like, I had a list when we first talked about it, I rattled off 25 names, you know. And to get it down to six.
Definitely TC's wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had Sonny Boy Williamson, Hank Ballard, Jelly Roll Morton, Ink Spots, Elmore James, Nina Simone, you know, tons of them. But we got it down to six. So we're all good.
And so it wasn't on purpose, but just kind of how things ended up playing out, it seems that TC has kind of the earliest music. Carl has everything up into maybe the 70s, and I've got all the 80s and 90s and current stuff. So I think that's why we're going to start with TC today.
All righty, and I am up to the task. And my first song, I can't talk, Big Bill Broomzy. And it's from 1956, and it's a song called This Train. Now, the roots of this song go back to the 1920s in the Mississippi Delta Gospel. The first known recording was by Sister Rosetta Tharpe in the late 20s, and we'll hear from her a bit later. But I chose this Big Bill Broomzy version because of the lyrics. Now, this song is a real familiar song. It's been recorded by Arlo Guthrie, Mumford & Sons, Pete Seeger, but the lyrics seem to change every time this song is recorded by someone, and they'll be altered to fit the artist, or be it a gospel rendition or even a protest song. This big Bill Broomzy, say that five times fast, version touches on racism and equality, and you'll hear it in the lyrics about this train. So go ahead, Carl.
Okay, here we go. This Train by Big Bill Broomzy.
This train don't carry no gamblers. This train. This train don't carry no gamblers. This train. This train don't carry no gamblers. No whiskey drinkers and no water fires. This train carry no gamblers. This train. This train. Bound for glory, this train. This train is bound for glory, this train. and the holy of this train, bound for glory of this train. This train don't care no liars of this train. This train don't care no liars, this train. This train don't care no liars, no pocket pickers and no bar flyers of this train. Don't care no liars of this train. This train is built for speed, boy, this train. This train is built for speed, now this train. This train is built for speed, fastest train you ever did see, now this train. Built for speed, boy, this train. This train is solid black, boy, this train. This train is solid black, boy, this train. This train is solid black. When you go there, you don't come back, boy, on this train. Built for glory of this train. This train don't pay no transportation on this train. This train don't pay no transportation on this train. This train, you don't pay no transportation, no Jim Crow and no discrimination on this train. Bound for glory of this train. This train, don't care whether you're white or black on this train. This train, don't care whether you're white or black on this train. This train, don't care whether you're white or black. Everybody's treated just alike on this train. Bound for glory of this train. This train is bound for glory, this train. This train is bound for glory, this train. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy, this train. Bound for glory, this train. This train.
Nice. Like that.
Yeah, you see, how many songs do you know that mention Jim Crow? If you listen to, like, you know, Pete Seeger's version, it's going to be different lyrics. And, you know, of course, Mumford and Sons sang it differently. But, you know, Bill Brunsey brought out the, you know, this train doesn't care if you're black or white. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, one of my favorite kind of sort of, it's not really a B-side, but it is a lesser known song that from one of an artist that I'm really iffy on, but I will say hands down that the Bradley Nolan Friends acoustic album, which is sublime, is an absolutely fantastic album for some really classic old school like gospel and reggae like that. And they do have a version of this train on there, and it is one of my favorite versions of that song of all time. But
nice.
That one was fantastic.
Now, since you know that song so well, did you notice the lyrics are different in the one you know than the other?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. And I figured they would be anyway, because the Bradley Nolan version is actually kind of a mashup with one of their other songs, and so he kind of flows into another song at the end of it. So it's a shortened version, and the lyrics are slightly different, but beautiful rendition, seriously. But I liked actually kind of hearing the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay.
And Brunsey was a real, he was a real major voice in blues, in acoustic blues. And to have you choose him, that's really good, because I would suggest all of our listeners to check out a lot of things that he recorded, because great, great guitarist and great blues singer. And you know, one of the great acoustic blues people out there. So
when
I'm gonna go.
When
okay, go ahead.
Wait a second.
Up.
I want to tell you real quick. When Muddy Waters showed up in Chicago, Big Bill Brunzy took him under his wing, and Brunzy was playing all these really rough clubs, but he was also playing electric guitar at him. And he told Muddy Waters, he says, boy, you got to get an electric guitar because nobody's going to hear you over top of this ruckus in these clubs. So kind of a cool little story. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in the same vein, I actually changed a couple of my songs that I originally said. And I figured I'd also go with a folk singer from the 50s. And we're going to go with Odetta. Okay, now Odetta was a folk singer. She made her professional debut in 1944 as in musical theater. And then in 1949, she joined the National Touring Company of Finian's Rainbow. And while she was on tour with Finian's Rainbow, they ended up in San Francisco. And she met a group of young balladeers, and she decided to go into folk singing. She made her name at the Blue Angel in New York, Hungry Eye in San Francisco, and at the Tin Angel in also in San Francisco. And in 1957, she recorded her first album, which I have in my collection. Now, John actually has it, John Shearer. And that's Odetta Sings Ballads and Blues. That's from 1957. It was on the Folkways, it was on Tradition label. And off this album, I'm going to play something called Another Man Done Gone. Now, this is what we call a holler song. Holler song has no accompaniment whatsoever. All she does is hand claps and her voice. And I want you to listen to this and tell me what you think of this little gem. This is Another Man Done Gone by Odetta.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the collar farm. Another man done gone. I didn't know his name. I didn't know his name. I didn't know his name. I didn't. Didn't know his name. He had a long chain on. 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 Had a long chain on. They killed another man. They killed another man. They killed another man. They killed another man. Killed another man. Another man let go. Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
And that's Odetta, Another Man Done Gone, of course, talking about the lynchings in the South. So what do you guys think of that one?
Oh, that'll put you in a weird little trance there. Yeah, that was beautiful.
How about you, TC?
You know, without musical accompaniment behind it, to, like, set the mood of the song. Boy, she really brings out the sadness, doesn't she? You can feel her pain while she's singing. It doesn't give us a, you know, like, you know, you hear the background music, the melody and all that. Nah, she puts it right out there on that one. That was a good find, Carl.
Oh, thanks. Well, I just want to give you a little more on Odetta. She recorded until the 80s, and she also acted in a number of films, particularly the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. But she also was a mentor to many, many female vocalists, particularly Janis Ian, who she met when Janis Ian did Society's Child in 67. They became very good friends, and Odetta was very, very much a mentor to Janis Ian. So I just wanted to bring that out and that little connection too. But man, that is a voice. That's a voice. Huh. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Gary, yeah, that's it was incredible. It really was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess we're going to Miss Rachel. So what you got, Miss Rachel?
Wow, everything I have is in such a different direction than this beautiful music that you have. But I have to talk about, you know, the music industry and, like, world-changing black artists from, you know, my time and later. And it is definitely part of the reason I think some of these people are so essential is because they changed the way music sounded. And they did it in such a way that it broke through every, you know, racial barrier and gender barrier and everything else. It was, you know, a lot of these black artists are genuinely responsible for bridging the divide, and suddenly it doesn't matter what color you are, what, you know, gender you are, what pronouns you use. It's all about the music, and everybody can enjoy it. And I think that's what's so, so important to remember, not just during Black History Month, but every month of the year. But, you know, we all have things to contribute in this world, and it shouldn't matter what you are on the outside. So I just wanted to throw that out there and say that I'm going to start with what is probably the most quintessential black artist of all time, hands down. Everybody in the world loved this man. I'm pretty sure it was a national day of mourning when he passed away a number of years ago. That, of course, being Prince. Oh, my God. I mean, what can I say about Prince that hasn't already been said? And most of it is, damn, that dude is just, like, from another planet. So cool. Everything he does is gold.
So what song is it?
Well, I'm going with this one because, you know, of course we've got all of your traditional Raspberry Beret and Purple Rain and everything else. Now, this is from the Purple Rain album. That would be 1984, I believe. And we are going to do what, I mean, another hands down, everybody can agree with me, what is probably one of the sexiest songs of all time, especially to make it onto the radio. And that would be Darling Nikki.
And here we go. Darling Nikki by Prince.
Yeah. she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not resist when I saw little Nikki grind.
There you have it. That would be the infamous Darling Nikki by Prince. I will say you're probably, you know, people of my generation are a bit more familiar with the cover that the Red Hot Chili Peppers did, which was actually a surprisingly good cover, but it doesn't have...
It was.
It doesn't have quite the weird whaley emotion that the Prince version does.
No, and you know what? It was cool because that was such a detraction from what everybody knew Prince as, you know, the let's go crazy, blah, 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 and everything you heard on the radio. And boy, you heard that, and you saw the depth of the man, you know, where he could take his music.
Yeah, and I was about to say that the depth of his genius, really. I mean, the combination of, you know, electronic noise with, you know, wailing guitars and just, you know, oozing sexuality vocals. I mean, how?
Yeah.
Prince was one in a bajillion. That guy was an absolute treasure, and he. I mean, this was in 1984 he was doing this stuff. He was doing it before then, and it really did change music, I think, for the better in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I want to just jump in here for a second and just say this particular song was targeted by the PMRC, the Parents Music Resource Center, for, of course, the opening line of Masturbating with a Magazine, but not only that, but everything else in the thing. And, you know, the whole thing about the PMRC, it was just, you know, they're not looking at the artistry. Look at the backward masking he does at the end of that and all the sounds. I mean, he's really putting something together that very few people have put together, but he's doing it with you know, adult intentions. And I think that's to be applauded to be actually. So that's all I wanted to say about the song. It's a great song. Great song.
Absolutely. And a lot of the rest of his music is fantastic. Even when he had to get away from his record label and masquerade around as the nameless entity, the artist formerly known as Prince, as we called him, I think that was absolutely a genius move on his part. And B, it really teaches a lesson about how people are still trying to take advantage of those in the industry that aren't your typical, you know, white bread pop star.
True.
I think he picked up in a lot of ways. I think he picked up where Hendrix left off. You know,
I agree with that.
If you think about it, after Hendrix died, I mean, who were the black guitarists picking up the slack, you know? And he jumped right in there. And it's really cool because all my buddies were recently shared that video from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction when they were playing for George Harrison, when they were playing While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I don't know if you guys have seen that or not. It was Tom Petty on the stage and all these people. And Prince just blew them away. The looks on those guys' faces watching Prince play guitar, they were stunned. Such a cool video.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. And I almost went for that one, but I realized that it was originally written by a white dude, and I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, can't have any crackers on this show.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, we're trying to celebrate, like, you know,
right.
Black heritage
yep.
and music right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, what a shred he did on that.
Freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But I think we're moving on to you now, TC.
We are, and we're going to be hearing from Huddle Ledbetter, better known as Leadbelly. Real. I mean, this guy was influential to so many people. I'm going to tell a quick story about him, though. He was in prison 3 times, once for murder and twice for attempted murder. The murder he got out, he got pardoned by a governor who wrote a song for. But this is interesting. In 1937, Life magazine ran a 3-page article about him, and the title was Leadbelly, Bad Nigger Makes Good Minstrel. That was in Life magazine. Okay, and then they had pictures in the article, and one of those close up caption, these hands once killed a man, right in the article. Okay, so what we're going to hear from him today is Cotton Fields, which was written by him, and it's a 1940 original version, but it was never released till 1954, or at least got recognized till 1954, when it was included in an album collection of folk songs that it got any recognition. A few years later, in 1958, Harry Belafonte covered it and then had it on his 1959 live album. Since then, Cotton Fields has been recorded by the Highwaymen. They took it to number 13 in 1962. Beach Boys, Johnny Cash, Charlie Pride, even Elton John covered that song. But this is what we're going to hear. We're going to hear Cotton Fields, the original 1940 version. Carl?
And here we go. Cotton Fields, Lead Belly.
When I was a little baby, my mother locked me in the cradle. And I'm old Cotton Fields at home. When I was a little baby, my mother would lock me in the cradle. And the old cotton fields at home. Oh, when them cotton bowls get rotten, you couldn't pick very much cotton. And the old cotton fields at home. It was down in Louisiana, just a mile from Texarkana. And the old cotton fields at home. It may sound a little funny, but you didn't make very much money. And the old cotton fields at home. It may sound a little funny, but you didn't make very much money. And the old cotton fields at home. Oh, when them cotton bowls get rotten, you can't pick very much cotton. And the old cotton fields at home. It was down in Louisiana, just a mile from Texarkana, and I'm old cotton field at home. I was over in Arkansas, people asked me what you come here for, and I'm old cotton field at home. I was over in Arkansas, people asked me what you come here for, and I'm old cotton field at home. Oh, when them cotton bowls get rotten, you can't pick very much cotton, and I'm cotton field at home. It was down in Louisiana, just a mile from Texarkana. And the old cotton field at home. Oh, when the cotton bowls get rotten, you can't pick very much cotton. And the old cotton field at home. It was down in Louisiana, just a mile from Texarkana. And the old cotton field at home.
Great.
There you have
it. That is just fantastic.
You notice how he did a tempo change? Ever so slightly, he did a tempo change. He picked up the speed of the song a little bit towards the end. Yeah. But like I said, that song's been recorded by so many people. And he was really a big folk singer, and everybody's trying to, you know, get him, call him a blues singer, but he wanted to be known as a folk singer, and that's him, Lead Belly.
That's so nice to hear the original version, and to hear Lead Belly do it. I mean, the song is really well known, and has actually co-opted for church services, particularly in Black Baptists and so on and so forth. But boy, is that really something to hear. Really good choice, T.C. Really,
thank you. You want to see something really cool on YouTube? Are you familiar with Playing for Change? It's they got artists from all over the world. I mean, not even artists, regular people. And they coordinate these videos with, you know, like they got a guy in Argentina playing a mandolin or whatever, you know, a guy in Japan blowing a trumpet. Well, they have one for Cotton Fields back home that's just fantastic. So look up Cotton Fields Playing for Change on YouTube. It's a fantastic video. And like I said, artists from all over the world, you know, join in on this. It's pretty cool. Okay. That was me.
Okay, so I guess it comes to me now, Rach, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so we're going to move into Black doo-wop groups. Doo-wop was a specific type of singing. Generally, when it first began, it was they were white groups, but there became a bunch of groups that got together that were specifically black that took the sweet sound and then put it to R&B and became a lot more rough. And before I talk about this group, I have to give a nod to one of my favorite musicians, who is Ry Cooder. And Ry Cooder would do covers of many, many songs. And I get to know that version first and then say, well, who originally did it? Well, the song we're going to hear is smack dab in the middle. And this was done by a group by the Cadets. The Cadets were formed in Los Angeles. They began as a gospel group. But in 1955, they auditioned for Modern Records. And they recorded for Modern. They recorded for RPM. And a number of groups. The particular members were Lloyd McCraw, Willie Davis, Ted Taylor, Aaron Collins, Glendon Kingsby, and Will Dub Jones. Now, the interesting thing is this particular group generally was led by a bass singer. Now, generally would be tenors. We talked about that last time. TC mentioned that. And what you're going to hear is you're going to hear Will Dub Jones as the lead on this one. And this is a great song, and I love this song. And personally, when you listen to it, I want to be stuck smack dab in the middle. You'll understand that when you hear the song. And just give me a moment, and here we go. Smack dab in the middle by the Cadets.
Take me a town in any climb, where people like rocket time, and stay away all day and night. Everybody's feeling good and right, then throw me
smack dab in the middle.
Hit to me
smack dab in the middle.
Fling to me
smack dab in the middle.
Let me rock and roll to satisfy my soul. Tin Cadillac, diamond mill, tin suits of clothes, dress to kill, tin room house, some barbecue, 50 chicks not over 22, then throw me
smack dab in the middle,
flop for me
smack dab in the middle,
chunk for me
smack dab in the middle.
Let me rock and roll to satisfy my soul. Band, chorus girl, a street that pays with natural pearl, a wagon load, bars and stocks, that open up the doors at Fort Knox and throw me
smack dab in the middle,
hurdle me
smack dab in the middle,
block for me
smack dab in the middle.
Let me rock and roll to satisfy my soul.
I don't know what's wrong with you.
Well, my foot's sore from tapping it.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about you, Rachel?
Oh, I felt like I needed to light up a cigarette and be in like a montage of a 40s office space or something.
It's now one of the nice things about the cadets, for a long while I collected records, and they have one album, 12-inch album, that was put out by Topps, I think, in the late 50s, like 58, 59. And that particular album, if you had it in mint minus, at the time I was collecting, it would have been worth over $1,500. Now, the Hey. Copy that I had was in really bad shape, so I doubt it was worth $100. But I really don't care because I still have that, or at least John does. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't care.
That song has the three classic elements of a perfect doo-wop song. Backup
okay.
harmonies, killer piano, killer sax.
Yeah. Seriously. It's one of the
that
best. And another thing I should say real quickly about the cadets, and I actually had put this on when we did one of our novelty songs. They have a great song called Stranded in the Jungle, which was originally by the Jayhawks, but they did a version of it, which is the definitive version. They're
yeah.
a great group, and not as well known as some others, but
no.
God, they're so good.
Yeah. Good poll there, Carl.
Well, Miss Rachel, I think it's your
Rachel
turn.
Asked for it.
Yes, it is. And mine actually features two greats of the 80s, one of them being the one-hit wonder that is Rockwell.
You
may not know the name, but you definitely know the song.
Definitely
know who's in the song with him, and that would be Michael Jackson. Yes,
all
one
right.
of the most prolific black artists of all time. And actually, the only reason that this song got made at all is because Rockwell and Jackson were friends, and Michael Jackson agreed to be in the song with him so that Rockwell could impress his music producer dad and get his song put out. So... one of my favorite cheesy jams of the 80s. Yes, I have to admit that I shamelessly love this song. That would be Somebody's Rock Watching Me by Rockwell featuring Michael Jackson.
You know what? Come back to that one. Pick another one. I don't know why.
Okay.
That didn't get in the studio, but I can take care of that while we do another song.
Okay, well, then I guess we'll move up to the next song in the list, and that would be by another great Jackson, Michael's sister, Janet. One of the most empowering and socially conscious female and black artists of all time, Janet Jackson, and this would be from the 1986 album that really, really launched her solo career. It was the album, very autobiographical. The song is Control from the album Control. And, you can tell that this is where she stepped away from her father, her abusive father as her manager, and got her own record label and everything else. And this is where she started taking her career into her own hands and becoming the worldwide phenom that she is today. And still... to this day, one of the best-selling artists of all time, Janet Jackson. So,
here we go. Sorry about that. I'll get the other one up.
Yep, you're good. So let's do Control by Janet Jackson.
This is a story about control. My control. Control of what I say, control of what I do. And this time I'm going to do it my way. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do.
That's something. I'm not a huge fan, but she's really good at what she does. There's no doubt.
Look, fess up, honesty time confession here. Not my jam at all, but I recognize the importance of Janet Jackson in Black culture and Black music history and just music history in general. I mean, I personally look to her as one of the front runners of the sexy, empowered, independent woman movement. because, I mean, she started this shit in the 80s, and she was one of the first women out there and one of the first black women out there to be like, look, fuck you, I'm taking control of my shit. And that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
And
you know, it's interesting to me is, like, in the 80s, they used, you know, a drum machine, which was like the forerunner to the electronic drum kits we see nowadays. But
yeah,
the use of it for something like what she did, you know, I mean, it's just, it throws such a powerful beat behind, you know, her lyrics that, you know, it really, if they used a regular drum kit there, you know, it's a song with just, you know, I mean,
no,
it just, the electric drum kit or, you know, drum machine really, really brings her out too. You know, I mean, it ties in so well with what she did. I was, you know what, I was never a fan of those drum machines. I said, this is going to ruin music. But now that I go back and look at it, like with that song right there, it's like, you know, that adds a powerful, you know, element to a song.
Well,
so
it does. And this is also the time when the visual element of music started coming around. I mean, Janet Jackson is widely credited with, you know, populating the beginning of MTV and helping them grow to the massive level that they did. And if you watch any of her music videos, that woman is one of the best dancers I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm talking some of the most intricate choreography ever. And I mean, she pops, locks, and nails it every time. And that's the other thing is, like, if you watch the videos with that electronic drum machine making just such crisp beats, it really accentuates how crisp her dancing is. And she is a phenom.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Good.
Oh,
and
good
even
choice.
If you don't like her music, you have to admit that that woman is definitely very easy to look at.
Her contribution, I mean, you can't deny. You cannot deny, and you hit it right on the head. You nailed it. I mean, she brought us 70s where all, like, you know, I mean, nothing real exciting as far as the women go. I mean, there were women in rock, but nobody took it to a level like Janet Jackson did. And she was pop, she was rock, she was R&B. I mean, you know, She covered quite a lot of territory there.
Well, and it was her fusion of all of those things that actually really contributed a lot, I feel, to music, because she did. She was one of the first people, you know, with her team and her collaborators. You know, they had this real, like, funk, jazz, you know, kind of R&B fusion thing going with, you know, pop overtones. And it actually made it successful. It made her music successful on, you know, more than one station because, you know, she could be pop. She could be kind of, you know, funky R&B. Like, so, yeah, I mean, and that is such an important contribution because I think that fusions of styles of music are probably some of my favorite things right now. So thank you, Janet Jackson.
And thank you for sharing that with us.
All
Absolutely.
Right. Well, there you go, Mr. TC. I think it goes back to you now.
Yeah, I'm going to take us back in the old days again, about 30 years before that one came out. We're going to go back to 1955 and Big Joe Turner. Okay, and the song is Flip, Flop, and Fly. This is a follow-up to his big R&B hit from the year before, Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which, you know, set the R&B and rock and roll world on fire. In fact, some critics and music historians noted Flip, Flop, and Fly followed the same up-tempo 12-bars blues pattern. And even it suggested that Flip, Flop, and Fly contained leftover verses from Shake, Rattle, and Roll. They're like comparing both songs, like, okay, Joe didn't do much different here. But the following year, in 1956, Elvis Presley performed this song on his very first TV appearance. And it's been covered by many artists, but most notably from people, you know, from our age and younger, was the Blues Brothers covered it on their Briefcase Full of Blues album in 1978. So, Carl, give us Big Joe Turner.
Absolutely.
Now when I get the blues, I get me a rocking chair. When I get the blues, I get me a rocking chair. Well, the blues overtake me, gonna rock right away from here. Now when I get lonesome, I jump on the telephone. Get lonesome, I jump on the telephone. I call my baby, tell him on my way back home. Now flip, flop, and fly, I don't care if I die. Now flip, flop, and fly, I don't care if I die. Don't ever leave me, don't ever say goodbye. Give me one more kiss, hold it a long, long time. Give me one more kiss, hold it a long, long time. Now love me, baby, to the feeling hits my head like wine. Here comes my baby, flashing a new gold dew. Here comes my baby, flashing a new gold dew. She's so small, she can mumble in a baby-bone booth. Now flip, flop, and fly, I don't care if I die. Now flip, flop, and fly, I don't care if I die. Now don't ever leave me, don't ever say goodbye.
Classic song. I had the 45 of that at one point. I traded it, but I did have the 45 of that.
Yeah, it was like I said, you know, he came out with Shake, Rattle, and Roll, set the world on fire with that, and then he came out with this, and everybody's like, wait a minute, sounds like the last one. But no, it's so much different. How do you like that, Rachel?
I like that one. I actually think I like it better than Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
Yeah. Well, like I said, a lot of people are familiar with the Blues Brothers version of it. You know, I mean, when their album came out, Briefcase Full of Blues, and I think that probably introduced a lot of people to the song. But sadly, people don't look back to see where it came from. They didn't come,
right.
You know, a lot of people heard that and thought, well, that's cool, that's a Blues Brothers song. No, it's a Big Joe Turner song. That's why we do this. That's why we show, you know, what an original sounds like. You know,
absolutely.
Be a little curious. Be a little curious. See who originally did that song. What it sounded like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay, I'm done for you.
And I totally agree with that. One of the things when the kids were working with me alphabetizing the records and that, when I had the music store in Bradford, you know, I would always talk to them. They'd talk about a song. I said, well, that was originally done by such and such. And I think that's one of the reasons we do what we do here, and particularly during this month, during Black History Month. I'm going to go with one of my favorites. Now, the song itself, which is Big 10-inch, was, of course, covered by Aerosmith. But the original person was Bull Moose Jackson, who did it in the 50s. Now, Bull Moose started in the 40s as a blues singer and also an R&B person. He was then hired by Lucky Melander to be a sax player. And he was a sax player. He then began singing when Winoni Harris got sick in Dallas, and he started recording in the 40s. In the 50s, he started really touring, and his band included the bebop composer Tad Dameron and Benny Golson on saxophone. And then he went into like risque material like this, which we'll hear, Big 10-inch record. But he would didn't sell because they didn't want it to be on radio. But he always did it in live performances. And this should be interesting to you. He retired in the 60s. But in the early 80s, there was a band that was out of Pittsburgh called the Flash Cats. And they regularly included Big 10-inch record in their performances. And one of their people met someone who knew Bull Moose Jackson. And so Carl Grafesett, who ran into him and said, why don't you record with us? So in the 80s, he became quite a sensation around Pittsburgh. And then he recorded a comeback album on Rhino Records called Moose Mania. But then after that, he succumbed to lung cancer, and he finally died in his hometown of Cleveland in 1989. So we're going to go with Big 10-inch by Bull Moose Jackson. And you should know this.
Got me the strangest woman. Believe me, this chick's no cinch. But I really get her going when I take out my big 10-inch record of the band that plays the blues. The band that plays the blues. She just loves my big 10-inch record of her favorite blues. I gave her a little pinch, but she said, now stop that jiving and get out that big 10-inch record of the band that plays the blues. Well, the band that plays the blues. She just loves my big 10-inch record of her favorite blues. I cover her with kisses when we're in a lover's clinch, and when she gets all excited, she begs for my big 10-inch record of the band that plays the blues. Well, the band that plays the blues. She just loves that big 10-inch record of her favorite blues. Just makes her flinch. See, she just goes for nothing except my big 10-inch record of the band that plays the blues. Well, the band that plays the blues. She just loves my big 10-inch record of her favorite blues.
So I should let everyone know that back in the day when there were 78s, they were 10 inches. LPs are 12 inches. Just want to make that point.
That was better than the Aerosmith version by far.
Yeah. And I bet that's not all she loved.
Exactly. You know, it was very common that there were R-rated versions of music or very suggestive music within the black community. You know, even someone like Jackie Wilson did X-rated material. So, you know, and they would do it for specific audiences. And so yeah, that was extremely common. And that goes way back to Bessie Smith and before.
Oh, yeah, back in the 40s and 30s and stuff. And they weren't shy about talking about cocaine or reefer or any either.
No, not at all.
Yeah, well, there's a song called Reefer Man by Cab Calloway that's a great song. In fact, when I start my show, I'm going to have a whole green show one day. All songs about that.
On 420. Do it on 420. Absolutely.
That would be perfect, Carl. I have Snoop Dogg as a co-host.
There you go.
Okay, Rachel's turn.
So any comments
Rachel's
on Big
turn.
10-inch, Rachel?
Oh, we are.
Oh, no, I think that's hilarious. But, you know, I love music like that. So I'm sure you expect that I would love that.
Absolutely. So I think it's your turn now, Rach.
It is. What's the status on the other song?
We got it. It's in.
Okay, awesome. Well, since we've already introduced that one, let's just go ahead and go right into Somebody's Watching Me by Rockwell.
Here we go. Somebody's Watching Me.
What was that?
Okay, Rockwell or Stone Bad. I don't know. Whatever. Here we go.
Watching me.
Again, not exactly my gig, but not a bad song.
I mean, come on. If that didn't have you twitching your hips a little and chair dancing, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. Now, again,
it had
more?
It had me peeking out the window.
Right.
looking out the peephole.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everybody's felt like that, especially if, when you live alone and, like, you're going to take a shower and, like, totally having a psycho moment.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Jermaine's on that, too.
I was just going to say that. I was like, I did not know that until I was today years old when I discovered that Jermaine Jackson also does backup vocals on that song.
Yeah, I Googled while we were talking about it. You know, it's pretty cool that he didn't want to show nepotism. You know, of course his dad, you know, was Barry Gordy. And he didn't want to show nepotism. He actually recorded that behind his dad's back with Motown. And Motown suggested to use the name Rockwell.
Well, his dad was the founder of Motown.
Right.
Yeah,
but he recorded it without his father's knowledge, is what this says.
Yeah,
and Motown actually came up with the name Rockwell, and young Gordy agreed to the change because he believed he rocked well, and you didn't see the air quotes I just made when I said that. So take a visual of me making air quotes going rocked well.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, his second single from that album, which was something Phone Calls. Oh, damn it. It's like Obtrusive Phone Calls or something like that. Another paranoid-sounding song. It got into the top 40 for a little bit, but, yeah, that was the only album he ever recorded, and I've never heard anything else from it, so.
Well, how about this? On November 28, 2018, Rockwell was arrested in Hollywood for allegedly beating a female associate with a chair at the Magic Castle Hotel.
Wow. That's
after she approached him and demanded payment. Uh-huh. Okay. So, I guess Rockwell didn't turn out to be a good human being.
Damn.
It happened.
We all can't be, you know. Be pretty boring if we're
all. We all can't be you, GC.
Back to me,
go ahead,
huh? Brad. I am actually going to play my newest song. It's from 1961. Look at that. We jumped up to the 60s. And it is by one of my favorite guitar players ever, Freddie King. And we're going to hear I'm Torn Down. This song is credited to his longtime piano player, Sonny Thompson, as a songwriter. And this song is probably most well-known for Eric Clapton's cover on his 1994 blues tribute album, From the Cradle. And you know, a lot of people, how they morph a song and they try to make it their own. Clapton actually followed King's arrangement very closely, including the falsetto vocal phrasing and guitar riffs. And it was also covered by late Irish blues guitarist Gary Moore. But this is I'm Torn Down by one of my guitar heroes, Freddie King.
And here we go.
Well, I'm torn down.
know I love you in the morning and in the evening too. Every time you leave me, I get mad with you. Well, I'm gonna almost have a withdrawal. Yes, I feel like this, but my baby can't be
Clapton version, which a lot of people, I mean, that was all over the radio in the 80s and right up till today. You can see it. It follows it very closely to the vest. And I like that. And Eric Clapton is probably, I don't know, he's one of the greatest cover artists out there. And he really promoted a lot of blues like Freddie King, Robert Johnson, you know. And I think a lot of people, there's another one. You listen to Eric Clapton's version, and hopefully it piques your interest, and you look to see where that original came from, like I'm Torn Down by Freddie King. So I love that guy. I mean, everything he does. I could do 5 shows about Freddie King. So that's
yeah, I
can
believe it.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you know,
hey, what did you think,
you know,
Rachel?
The Eric Clapton version?
Well, I just said, that was amazing. Beautiful, beautiful. And yeah, I'm familiar with the Clapton version, so you are correct. It is very similar.
Yeah.
Almost the exact same song.
And I think, you know, I think that's just the ultimate tribute to the original artist by, you know, going close to the vest. It's not like, well, I'm going to take his song and make it mine. You know, he's like, no, this is Freddie King's song, and I'm going to play it like Freddie King played it.
Right. I mean, sometimes you just don't mess with perfection.
You just nailed it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So I guess it's on to me now. And since we were talking about Freddie King, I thought we'd go with Johnny Guitar Watson. Now, I had a real problem here because I didn't know which way to go with Watson. He started out in the 50s, and he was really one of the major influences on the great guitarist in the 60s.
You tried to put this on me. You said, which song I play? Oh, no. You picked it yourself.
anyway, he was a big influence with Feedback and that sort of thing with a song called Space Guitar. He also did a song called Gangster of Love, which is not the song that you know from the 70s. Okay, but
Steve Miller Band.
Right, Steve Miller Band. So it really was like I didn't know whether to go there or where I finally went, which was in this funk era, because he really reemerged in the 70s as a funk / R&B artist. He recorded out of Buffalo on Amherst Records. During his years, he toured with Little Richard, The Olympics, Johnny Otis. He guested on Frank Zappa albums. He also was worked with Herb Alpert and George Duke. But this guy was all over the place. He's also was when he finally died. He died while he was doing a concert in 1996. He was performing, died of a heart attack. So he started and he ended on stage. And the song I'm going to do is his biggest charting song that he ever had. It's called A Real Mother for You from 1977. But just keep in mind that this guy was from the 50s too. So at this point in the 70s, he's almost in his 50s. You know, he's in his late 40s and he's doing this. I want to make that clear. Check this out.
Goodbye, yeah. Now it's a real motherfucker, yeah. Oh. here at this gas station. Give me 3 gallons of low lead. I'm cold, nothing else. I better stop and give me 2 hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
And that's Johnny Guitar Watson. I also want to say before you guys come in on this, I couldn't remember who the guitarist was that he had a real influence on. That would be Jimi Hendrix, because Johnny Guitar Watson was the one to really play behind his back. He's the first one to burn a guitar on stage. Oh, yeah. This is Johnny Guitar Watson.
I knew you were talking about Hendrix, and I should have jumped in. But Rachel, you want to comment first?
I thought that was kind of a smooth jam. It had a lot of good funk to it. And I think that's something that really ties a lot of our music together, even though it's, like, wildly diverse from each other. There's a lot of funky elements to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a great funkmeister. He really is. And that was late in his career.
Okay, you said that was, what, 77, 78, somewhere around
there? Yeah, that was 77.
Okay, the 70s was kind of a weird era for funk. We started it out with, like, Isaac Hayes, Curtis Mayfield, and then disco came in and fucked it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I mean, we still had funk, but it had the disco beat to it. And your man there, Carl, said, fuck that disco beat to it. We're going to stick to the funk. And
well,
that was perfect. That could have easily.
Well, remember, this is 77. I think you were gone from UPB at the time. But I used to play this fucking tune all the time at the campus radio station.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's right out of that Isaac Hayes, Curtis Mayfield type, you know, era, the early 70s. So, he was good. He tried to keep the funk alive with that song.
Absolutely.
It was like the anti-disco. So, good job, Carl. That was a good one. I loved it. Now I'm going to go back and listen to his old shit.
Oh, his old shit is great, man.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's right along the Freddie King line there. I'm excited to see what Rachel's got for us.
Oh, you guys are going to hate me for this one. Now, this is the last one that you guys are going to hate me for, but my last two are going to make up for it, I promise.
It's not like the last one ever we will hate you for, right? Just the last one tonight.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely just for tonight.
Okay.
No guarantees for the future. But I think that you guys will agree with me. I know Carl did yesterday when we were talking about it. There is one particular black female artist that, hands down, nobody can deny, is one of the greatest voices of all time. And that would be the quintessential Whitney Houston. Now, I personally, again, not my jam. But is she important? Did she make a fucking difference with her music? Oh, God, yes. And, yeah, actually the song that she's most well-known for is a cover. Originally done by Dolly Parton, the song I Will Always Love You. But no, I will never, ever play that song on purpose.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry. Never.
Thank you.
Now, this one was a little harder for me because out of all of the artists that I grew up with in the 80s and 90s and stuff, Whitney Houston was definitely my least favorite. But that doesn't mean, again, that I can't recognize the amazing amount of talent that woman had and just the absolute vocal range. And that is why I tried to pick a song that most people weren't going to be as familiar with, but that also You know, you could hear just her depth of voice, I guess. And that would be a song for you by Whitney Houston.
Well, this song's for you, Rachel, by Whitney Houston.
Oh, thanks.
But you cannot complain about that voice. That is for sure.
Exactly. And not my style of music, but that voice was sent from somewhere above.
And her contribution, I mean, you know, you can't argue about what she contributed to pop music, that's for sure. It picked up nicely. You know, it started out kind of, the piano was unnecessary at the beginning, but, you know, it picked up nicely and nice beat. Good song. I was tapping my foot to it.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And
I enjoyed it.
All right.
Well, I think that also takes us back to you, TC.
It sure does. And I have another female for us. But this lady, we're calling her the original soul sister and the godmother of rock and roll. And I mentioned her earlier, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And we heard this train by Big Bill Bruzy, which was recorded, I think I said 1955. She recorded it in 1939. But the song I'm going to play, other than our Christmas show when Carl came up with all these weird chants that might have been from the 16th century, I don't know. This might be the oldest song we hear on this show. Its roots go back before the American Civil War. It's an African-American spiritual song, which is called Down by the Riverside. The first known publishing of it was in 1918 in a study called, all right, here comes my air quotes again, Plantation Melodies, a collection of modern, popular, and old-time Negro songs of the Southland. All right? And the first known recording...
I'm going to interrupt here for a second. I'm going to interrupt because that particular songbook I have held in my hands.
Have you really?
Seriously. Yes, I have.
What's the worth of that?
That goes back to, I was working at Carl Fisher in the 80s in New York City, and they had a copy of that. I saw a copy of that, held it in my hands. Seriously.
1918.
Yeah.
I love it. And, okay, so the first known recording was actually 2 years later in 1920, and there were at least 14 gospel recordings, black gospel recordings, before World War II. It can be considered one of the first known war protest songs. And if you listen to the lyrics, there's war protest. Now, this was before the American Civil War it was written. In fact, one of the reasons Sister Rosetta Tharpe covered it, it was in 1944 during the height of World War II. It was even revived as a protest song during the Vietnam War. And let's hear it, Carl, Down by the Riverside.
Here we go, Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
I'm going to lay down my heavy load down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm going to lay down my heavy load down by the riverside, study war no more. I ain't going to study war no more. No, I ain't going to study war no more. No, no, I ain't going to study. War no more, no, I ain't gonna study. War no more, no, no, I ain't gonna study.
blessed. That is beautiful.
Absolutely.
She, it's funny, you know, she never lost her gospel roots. And as much credit she gets, every guitar player in the 50s, the 60s, they say it was her. You heard the guitar playing in there. She was one of the first ones to really put an electric guitar to use, like in blues and gospel and everything. And so she was like a guitar pioneer for all these other people. I mean, right through Clapton, all the 50s, 60s artists. Sister Rosetta Tharpe was the lady.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A seminal figure. Seminal figure. I mean, you don't get modern gospel, you don't get R&B, you don't get soul without Sister Rosetta.
You are correct with that, my friend.
Okay, so I actually think, and I need to ask both of you, the last show, did I do Edgar the Hen by Coco Taylor? I think I did.
I'm not sure.
No.
I don't think
okay,
so.
Well,
I don't remember
songs,
that on the list.
Okay,
we're doing love songs.
So if I repeat myself, I repeat myself. I don't care. I mentioned earlier that Ry Cooder was a major influence on me, and he did a cover version of this song. And I then searched for the original by Coco Taylor. Now, I saw Coco a number of times, and I had a friend of mine who we both loved her. And you know, just an amazing, amazing vocalist, and also very much on the same level of Etta James. They both recorded for Chess Records. Coco actually was on Checker, and Etta was on Chess. But this is an amazing song. It's called Edgar the Hen. And if I repeat myself from last time, forgive me, because this is her best song by far. again, if I repeated myself, I don't care because that's such a great fucking song.
You didn't play that before. That's the Queen of Chicago Blues right there, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This friend of mine had a sobriquet for her, for Coco. And what he said was, she's big, she's black, she sweats, she sings like a motherfucker.
Yeah. She belts it. Powerful, powerful voice.
What did you think of that, Rachel?
I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. And I love how she just juxtapositions like hot and cold and good and evil and all that. It's a great song. It's a great song. So I think that goes on to you, Miss Rachel.
It does. And hopefully this one will make up for my previous selections. But again, I stand by my selections. They're just not our particular favorite kinds of music. This one, however, if it doesn't get you in the soul hole, you're probably dead already. And this is by what I consider to be a super group, but it's not, you know, an actual super group. It is just a group that came together and became super and amazing, and then later they all, you know, had their own solo careers that were also awesome. And that, of course, would be the Fugees. Yes, the Refugees, Wyclef Jean, Lauryn Hill, all the gang. And one of my just absolute favorite songs of all time, just in general, is definitely Killing Me Softly. Now, I know that this is a cover, but I genuinely, genuinely think that this is one of the better covers that has ever been made. And I remember talking to Carl about it when we did one of our cover episodes a while back, and I ended up talking myself out of playing this one, so I'm going to play it for us now because, well, Lauryn Hill is just fucking prolific and amazing, and you'll see why in a moment. Killing Me Softly.
And here we go, Killing Me Softly by the Fugees.
I'm in my pain with his finger, singing my life with his words. Killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing. I felt he found my letter and read
was out from the refugee camp. You know how we do. Why clap prize? Well, my man Little Bass, Jerry, one time. This is how we
Everybody got a breaking point, kid, and they'll rat on you. The family niggas will rat on you. That's why we gotta be prepared to put whoever out we need.
Good cover. Now, before we go, I just want everyone listening to know that we're gonna go into overtime here in about a minute. So what you can do is finish up the show tomorrow and just click on the link, and you'll hear the rest of the like 30 more minutes of music. So there you go. So we'll take it over to Miss Rachel. What do you want to say about that? Damn good cover.
Oh, absolutely fantastic cover, and actually a great story, because I don't know how people don't get this. I guess they don't really listen to it. A lot of people think it's some sort of like depressing love song, and it's really not. Roberta Flack, the original singer of Killing Me Softly, I'm trying to remember who it was she went to see. One of those, you know, great random hippie artists in the 60s or whatever. And she had such a weird visceral connection to his music. Like, she literally felt like he was up there just singing the entire concert to and about her. And that song was the reaction that she had to really connecting to the music so intensely. And I thought that was a beautiful story for a beautiful fucking song, whichever version you listen to. But also the Fugees were just essential in the foundations of just, I don't know, I consider it kind of like an ethereal hip-hop, because it's got the beautiful female vocals that are just absolutely angelic over the top of this kind of, you know, hardcore hip-hop, and it's a beautiful fusion. Again, thank you, Janet Jackson.
So what's your thoughts, TC?
Well, I wanted to quickly mention tomorrow night before we lose our audience, and then I'll tell you what I feel about the song. Tomorrow night's the debut of Rock This Town Radio with TC, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Deviant Legion Network. If you like what I do here, I think you're going to like what I do there. Okay, the song. I like the original better. I saw where they went with that. The beat is cool as hell. And I know the backstory, like what you were saying about it. You know, everybody thinks it's like this big depressing song. And I think they brought out, this group brought out the real meaning of it better than she did.
Yeah.
Particularly if you see the video. Because the video, you know, shows it right in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you had a good pull there. I like that. And there's one that we talked about, you know, how Eric Clapton, Close to the Vest with Freddie King, but they did their own interpretation of that song there, and it played well, played very well.
And that's the thing is, sometimes you want it to be close to the original, but sometimes, like, well, bands like the Fugees just really hit a fucking lick when they put their own spin on it, and they make it their own, but they don't take away anything from the original.
But did we really want to hear a Close to the Vest, Killing Me Softly? No, we didn't.
No.
You know, no, absolutely not. So, I mean, they did a great job of, you know, putting their own spin on it, like I said. So that was nice. I like that.
Well, there you go. And that takes us back to you, I believe.
You know, and how the hell can I do a Black History show without Richard Wayne Pennyman? You know who that is, Rachel? Little Richard.
What?
We have to have some Little Richard in here.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Black History Month, and the king of black music, rock and roll, R&B. And we're going to hear Good Golly Miss Molly. And it's interesting because he claims that he first heard the phrase Good Golly Miss Molly from a Southern DJ. And when you hear the song start, the piano intro, it's actually taken from Ike Turner's piano intro for his 1951 hit Rocket 88, which inspired him to come up with this. And I could talk all day about Little Richard, but I just want to hear the fucking song. Go for it,
girl. Okay, Good Golly Miss Molly. Period. Do not pass go.
Yeah.
Do not collect $200.
Absolutely.
So, Rachel, what did you think of that one?
Well, I've always loved that song, so of course I was chair dancing, but...
It's just, you know, it kind of starts and ends with Little Richard. I mean, with just so much he did. So much he did for, you know, like as far as a black performer, you know. I mean, we had, it seemed like, you know, the blues was all black. And then rock and roll came, and there's a lot of white guys. And it's like Little Richard said, wait a fucking minute. Black guys can do rock and roll too. You know, guys like him and Chuck Berry. And, you know, I mean, I like I said at the very beginning of the show, I had probably 30 people right off the top of my head that I could have added, including Chuck Berry, but I had to have Little Richard in there.
And I'm
can't go wrong with the Penniman. You can't. And the,
yeah.
You know, there's a story, okay, that you may not know. Now, back in the 50s, it was very, very common for a white artist to cover a black artist song for the white radio.
Right away.
And one of the people that did that constantly was Pat Boone. So
yep.
Pat Boone did a cover of Little Richard's Tutti Frutti. And it happened to be on the same stage, the same concert stage. during the concert.
Yeah.
And Pat Boone went over to Little Richard and said, I'm selling a lot more records than you are with Tutti Frutti. Richard Penman says, who do you think wrote it, motherfucker? Who do you think you get the royalties to?
Perfect. Yeah, there was a lot of that, too.
So.
And we heard that earlier with Big Joe Turner. I said flip-flop.
Absolutely.
The next year, Elvis did it on his first TV appearance. You know, everybody's like, wow, here's Elvis, you know. And Big Joe Turner's like sitting back, okay, fucker. Okay, cracker, send me the check.
Absolutely.
It was like that,
and that's one of the things we got to realize, that a lot of the early rock and roll were written by black performers. I tagged you in an article on Otis Blackwell.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, seriously. Now, I'm going to go. You know, you had to do Little Richard, but if we're doing a show on black performers,
let me say something really quick along that line. British rock and roll, everybody that came from that British invasion said Sister Rosetta Tharpe was one of their biggest influences. She did a concert tour over there at Muddy Waters, and it just blew away all these young guys like Eric Clapton and, you know, Jimmy Page, and they saw Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and they're like, holy shit. And she really contributed to the British invasion that way.
Yeah,
okay,
she
I'm
did.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so you had to do Little Richard. Well, we cannot do a show on black performers without mentioning James Brown. Ain't going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, you know, you think of Papa's Got a Brand New Bag and all these things he did in the 60s, but a lot of people don't realize he started out in the 50s in doo-wop. And and he had a group called the Fabulous Flames. And we're going to do the first number one R&B hit that James Brown ever had. And that would be Please, Please, Please. And if you aren't blown away by this, something's wrong with you. That's all I'm saying.
This is the song that opened the door.
Please, 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 please. Wrong. Well, you done me wrong.
Insane. Good Lord.
I could see him sweating. That opened the door for him right there. I love that you dug that one up, blew the dust off it and put it on for us.
You gotta do James Rachel? Brown. You just have to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The
well,
man is the
I
king
actually,
of soul.
That song makes me laugh a lot because I used to work with a guy that loves James Brown, and he showed me a live recording of that song. He did Please, 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 and it was the most dramatic stage performance I've seen beyond Lamp Dance with David Byrne. He was like hands and knees sweating and shaking and like pleading. Oh. And he was just so dramatic about it. And my buddy who was showing me the video was acting it out at the same time in the middle of the floor at work. And it just, God, it was hilarious.
every muscle, every fiber went into his songs. And you watch it, like if you're watching that video, you're just waiting for him to jump out of the fucking screen. You know, I mean, it's so real watching him.
And let's not forget, how much of an influence he was with people in his band. Bootsy Collins, Jimi Hendrix,
yeah.
Bernie Worrell. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. And that's one thing I wanted to bring up about Little Richard, too. Little Richard probably had the best backing musicians ever. And James Brown was right there with him, you know. And some people might think, well, you know, but I'll tell you, James Brown, he could have me playing behind him and he'd still be amazing. You know, it's just, and Little Richard, too. I'm glad we played both of them. They really needed to be in this show, and we can agree we could go for 10 hours, easily.
You know, there's so many people. I mean, we haven't brought in Sly and the Family Stone. We haven't brought in Parliament Funkadelic and George Clinton. You know, I mean, we could go on forever.
Oh my God, you know, Earth, Wind and Fire. Okay, forget it. Let's not talk anymore because we got to put that one for Rachel.
We are already in overtime, but this has been a fantastic show. I've got one that I think, and I think Carl might agree with me on this one as well, is kind of quintessential because not only are they from, you know, the early 80s, but they have stayed relevant and making music until even now. In fact, the song that I'm going to play of theirs is from 2020, I believe. I watched the video and they're all wearing masks and stuff. And that would, of course, be Public Enemy. I really respect the fuck out of Public Enemy because they have always had a very politically charged message, like just unapologetically have stayed the course of their political activism since the early 80s until even now. And not only, you know, did they have this message and become like a major super group that stemmed a lot of other solo careers, kind of like a lot of the things we've been listening to today. But, you know, they've they've stayed true to their message the entire time. I mean, they've been doing this for 30-something years, and they've managed to stay relevant. And, in fact, that is something that almost all of the artists that I featured today, at least, have in common, is they all continued making music throughout their entire life, up until either they died or, like I said, some of them are still making music, like Public Enemy. And I think that in the current state of turmoil that the world seems to be in, there couldn't be a more perfect song to end the show on than State of the Union, STFU, by Public Enemy.
Yep, I agree.
In this lifetime, White House killer, dead in lifelines, broke this joke out, or die trying, unprecedented, demented, mini-presidented, Nazi, Gestapo, dictator, defendant, it's not what you think, it's what you follow, run for them jewels, drink from that bottle, another 4 years, gonna gut your hollow, gutted out, dried up, broken, can't borrow,
State of the Union, shut the fuck up, sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me, State of the Union, shut the fuck up.
In fact, I'm God, I got a lot. Mr. V's United Breaks, take over, come over. Orange hair, fear the comb over. Here's another scare, keep them hands in the air. Better not breathe, you dare not dare. Don't say nothing, don't think nothing. Make America great again, the middle just love it. When he wanna talk, walk y'all straight to them ovens. Human beings of color, yeah, we be suffering.
State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. Shut the fuck up, sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up, sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up, sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me.
Fucking game, I did not mention his name. Operation 45, yeah, it's the same thing. Sounds like Berlin burning, same thing. History's a mystery, if y'all ain't learning. In this clown show, for real estate bozo. Nazi cult 45, Gestapo.
State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me. State of the Union, shut the fuck up. Sorry ass motherfucker, stay away from me.
Wow. That's protest music. Seriously, that
yeah.
is pure protest.
Oh, they didn't make their words about their feelings at all.
I think I heard the F word in there. Did I?
A lot of the F word.
Yeah, you know.
The interesting thing about Public Enemy that I just want to say is, you know, I said it was protest music. Do you realize that they also, you know, all of this is sampling a lot of it. And so they have sampled a lot of people over their times, including one of the artists that I featured, which would be Odetta.
Yep.
So there's a direct line. And I remember going to Washington Square Park, but particularly Tompkins Square. And this is back in the 80s, and you'd have congregation of black people together, and they'd have the old ghetto blaster, and you would hear Public Enemy all the time. I mean, that was part of my soundtrack when I was living in New York in the 80s. Seriously.
I almost took a picture for you guys. I was driving around today, and Public Enemy, of course, came up on the radio. So I was like, yeah, I knew that was a good choice.
You said that was from 2020?
Yeah, he might have redone it for 20. Yeah, no, that is 2020.
No, he has redone it. That's an old song. But,
okay.
But yeah, that was redone in 2020.
So think of this. Lead Belly, 1940. Public Enemy, 2020. We spanned 80 years of black music tonight. I think we did a good job for Black History Month.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't think we even chipped the tip of the iceberg, but
I
want to continue on this path because I think we had a good representation of different eras today, definitely.
Oh yeah, I think we did
absolutely.
A nice cross section of. I mean, from like, you know, actually, if you want to do the song "Down by the Riverside" before the Civil War, so you know, we went about 180 years, something like that. But anyways, I think we did a great job tonight. And
there you go.
Yeah.
And I know my selections weren't necessarily everybody's cup of tea, but I think we can all appreciate why they were selected.
And well, same with mine too. I mean, you know, how many people?
Yeah, same with mine.
Fields. Yeah.
No.
But I think what happened tonight was we all picked songs that were important to us, what represented Black History Month to us, you know, where it came from. Like I dug a lot deeper, a lot older. I can't say I dug deeper, but I dug older, you know, and both of you dug deeper. So it's... I think we did a great job. We really do. I think this is probably one of my favorite shows.
Absolutely. So at this point, we need to do a little bit of housekeeping. So I'm going to get it over to TC again. Plug your show tomorrow again.
Okay. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m. right here in the Deviant Legion Blog Talk Radio. It'll be the premiere of Rock This Town Radio with TC. It'll be an hour-long show, and I'm all over the place. You'll hear old stuff. You'll hear new stuff. You'll hear stuff you know, stuff you don't know, and you're going to hear, holy crap, I haven't heard that one in ages songs with a little bit of information. I won't be talking as much as we do on this show, but I think it's going to be fun for everybody, and I hope people can join me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so on Monday, John Killian and Sean Borrega and I will be doing a commentary watch on the blaxploitation film Slaughter, which is stars James Brown. And we're going to be doing that on Monday. On Tuesday, Limes is back with us again, and also Vicki Love will be with us, and we're going to be talking about the impact of a particular movie in the 70s called Star Wars. Not only the first time we saw it, but also what that did to films and all the films that were influenced, and of course the subsequent films and the prequel. We're going to do this in two parts. So we're going to go to the prequels and talk about the prequels. And then the next show will be from the prequels on to now with The Mandalorian and all the other shows that are being influenced. We'll also probably talk a little bit about Star Wars versus Star Trek too. So I this will be a good two-parter that we're going to do in the next 2 weeks. And then we do have other things ready for the for next week, but they're not set in stone yet. And I will have that set up by tomorrow, so we'll announce it tomorrow during TC show. So that's what we got. Any last words as to our music selections and the impact of black artists on music? Rachel, you want to say anything?
Well, I think I pretty much said it all. I really appreciate the contributions that have been made, because music would not be what it is today without our black brothers and sisters helping us out a little.
I'll just more than a little.
I will
would
agree
think.
With that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
I will agree with that. Yeah, it's just like we said, we could do 20 shows like this. But, you know,
oh,
I mean,
easily.
We just scratched the surface. But I think we scratched the surface quite well. You know, and hopefully, you know, people listening, they'll get their interest piqued a little bit and look into some of the stuff we did. And, you know, if they hear a song that they know it's a cover, please go listen to the original. You're gonna find some good shit back there, I'm telling you. And then from there, branch off and listen to something else that that original guy did. Here's a little challenge for you. I'm Torn Down, Eric Clapton. Listen to the Freddie King version, then listen to another Freddie King song. You know, familiarize yourself with these people. There's so much good shit back there. Man.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Sorry. I'm getting chills, man.
TC gets off.
I'm fired up for
tomorrow
night, Carl.
Yeah.
I am fired up for tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow night's going to be great.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll be producing. I'll be in the background tomorrow.
Okay.
I won't say
much. Well, I want to do a mic.
I'll just be in the background.
When we get on, we'll do a mic check and all that. So, okay.
Yeah, exactly. All right,
Rachel. You did well tonight. And Carl, you did well tonight. Everybody did well.
You guys did. Thank you. Thank you again for being on with us, everybody. And I hope that we all have a great and wonderful evening. Don't forget to listen to TC's new show, Rock This Town Radio with TC, debuting tomorrow. I'm super stoked for that. And just keep tuned in for updates on what we'll be doing for the next few weeks. And beyond that, everybody have a good night.
All right.
Yes,
good night,
we
everyone.
Did well, and we rocked well. There you go. I have puns.
Did you do the air quotes?
Yes, I did.
And you said rocked well. Okay, good. All right. Good night, you guys.
Good night.